Welcome back, listeners. On this episode, I spoke to supervising sound editor and sound designer Martin Hernandez about his work on Bardo. Hernandez is a two-time Oscar nominee for The Revenant and Birdman. In addition, he is a four-time BAFTA Film Award nominee for The Revenant, where he won, Birdman, Babel, and Pan's Labyrinth. Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths, was written and directed by Alejandro Iñárritu.
I am absolutely so thrilled to be talking to you. You are such a legend, to be honest, a sound legend. And I can't believe I have the great opportunity to speak to you about one of my favorite films this year.
Thank you so much.
No, I truly mean it. I saw Bardo, and I actually saw it in by myself with no one in a theater.
That's the way to go.
What?
That's the way it should be.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was so, it was like I was out of my body for 2.5 hours. It was so wonderful. So I have to applaud you on that. I mean, that is just one marvel that you've done out of so many in your career. So I'm so honored.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. As you know, the supervision of this film and the sound design is shared with my friend and colleague, Nicolas Becker. Mm-hmm. Becker. And yes. also the hands of many skilled sound editors and sound designers that I've worked with a long time ago. One of them I want to acknowledge is Ken Yasumoto. Ken Yasumoto is the sound designer for Gaspar Noé. So you can imagine the kind of amazing work Ken does. So without them and Nico, this movie, as you can tell, it would have been impossible to do.
Oh, yeah.
That's that amount of time.
It takes a village. No, for sure.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting segue into one of my questions for you. In an interview, you described yourself as a translator to sound designers that are underneath you, that you work with. Can you expand on that and expand how that collaboration worked on this particular film?
Yeah. That's a very good question because it really evolves the truthful skill that we must apply in every film, regardless of the director. If we cannot communicate what it's there in between the lines, what's the backstory behind the story, you know? If you can't do that, then a good amount of the communication is broken. Normally, the director knows how he wants things. The DP is the interpreter of that point of view, and the actors are also, you know. But sound, it should be the same. It should be like an interpretation, you know, a translation of something that is very subjective. That in this film, in every film, but in this film specifically, is very emotional, and it relies on the memory, and it wants to express how you remember things rather than actually talking about what you see on the screen. You know, it was all a representation of the memory, which is a huge task.
Unimaginable.
Alejandro's representation of things is just the universe. It can be anything. So I was reading my notes. The first notes I remember, I still keep them. There is this note in October 21st of 2021. And this is a note that we did for a Zoom interview. And we're watching a scene, which is the Chapultepec scene with the Niños Héroes thing. And I have 120 plus notes And it's just like final review notes, okay? And I remember, well, we never stopped on that scene. We just hit the wall at the end in August and said, well, we have to hands off, leave the film, let it go. Because if you let Alejandro on his ways, he would be mixing still today, you know? There's always an opportunity because it's a very vast universe. But yeah, I should be, you know, communication is the same. I'm translating what I'm thinking. I think in Espanol, no? But it's a communication process. And doing sound and working in an environment of a film is the same. It's an interpretation process. It's a communication process. If you cannot communicate, it's doom.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting that you said, I mean, this film is obviously so much about memory, and to get into any person's memory is one thing, but to get into Alejandro's is a completely different memory, I feel, than the average person. So I can't imagine.
Well, you know, he and I we are about the same age, and we are around the same area on the city, no? And we have very similar backgrounds. We met when we were in college. So at one point when I was doing the first drafts on Bardo, I was relying a lot on that memory that I shared, no? The memories of that Mexico that is my Mexico as well, no? Or my interpretations of Mexico and the world. But at one point, it was not exactly the best way to go. And we realized that having a fresh point of view of a different person, of a different age, and a very different country, which is Nico, that brought a very fresh point of view, no? To what we were building, because I was too close to that. I was too, you know. And it's interesting how an 180 point of view on the same subject can, you know, incorporate very interesting and intriguing things.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you mind sharing, what is your memory of Mexico at that time?
I share the same feeling with Alejandro because we have more sound memories than anything else. I don't remember much of my childhood visually. I do have a few, you know, images, but I do remember a lot about the sound. And for me, the sound was almost the smell of the street, and sound was the TV shows, and sound for me was musical films. And I was, you know, raised in a very rich environment with a lot of films, a lot of books, a lot of music, and I grew up surrounded by grown-ups, and I was just like a sponge absorbing all that. So all my memories do belong to those things. And it was weird because a lot of the kids my age were completely, you know, they were not even connected to things that I knew, like, you know, from soundtracks, from Fiddler on the Roof, West Side Story, to The Tower in Inferno, you know, a lot of things that have to do more with sound. And Mexico was, in a way, more like a small town, if you can say that. No, it was isolated from the world. No, it's a Mexico that was constructed around one political party that was ruling, and it ruled for 70 years. So there is no one to challenge that. And obviously that creates a bubble. And we live in Mexico, we live in something that is called crisis, no? We were born in the crisis. So it's an economical crisis or some kind of crisis, but there is always a crisis, no? And that's another reference of that kind of Mexico.
And So when you come to the United States, and maybe especially for the first time, what were those sounds that you first picked up on?
The first thing that really caught my attention, my very first trip here, was the smell of the gasoline.
Mm.
It's a very unique smell in the U.S. of that gasoline. It's a very peculiar smell. And then the rest is a lot about music, because I used to work on a radio station.
Yeah.
And we came here many, many times for concerts or for interviews. At that time, I'm talking about the second half of the 80s, I probably interviewed Sting, the singer. I probably interviewed him like 8 times. So one of them, he was just like joking, like, oh no, you again. No? So we interviewed, Alejandro and I interviewed Pink Floyd. Later on, I interviewed David Bowie. So most of my memories of traveling here, not to LA, but you know, Houston, wherever the venue was, New York, it was more about, you know, meeting with music and going to music concerts.
Mm. And speaking of music, one of my favorite segments of any film of this entire year is the premiere after party, because I felt so, and I could smell the tequila. I could, I could feel the limes in my hand. I could taste the champagne. I could hear the music. And I just wonder, how did you build such a soundscape that's just, and I mean, obviously the music in there too. I mean, it's beautiful, the music in the background, but I mean, how did you build something that's so visceral to the human eye, especially in that moment? I mean, that is just like, there's like the image of like, that it's just, I don't know, it's the head sort of tilt back, and it's just like he's soaking it all in.
Yeah.
And I felt that particular way about that scene, and I'm just wondering how you built that and how you really constructed that.
Well, there's several elements there that are really helping. The first one is that's a true place. That's a true venue.
Hmm.
It is a legendary place in Mexico. It's called California Dancing Club. That's the name. And I'm saying the place probably has 60 years there.
Oh, wow.
And it looks like that because they haven't touched anything since they opened. So you can tell that the place has been forever. And that's a big thing, because you can't cheat. You know, it's not a set, it's that place. And like you are describing, you can almost smell the place. It's that real.
Mm.
So that's an amazing thing. The second thing, obviously, is that we were able to record the music there inside the place. You know, my colleagues and I went there, place microphones all over the place. And I wanted to capture the closeness, the absolute closeness, mid, far, really far at the entrance. So I have like the true recording of how do you perceive the resonance of that place. So we did that. And we did that with a huge group of dancers, because I wanted to perceive that closeness to the dancers as the camera is shifting through the people there, no? In the corridor, on the entrance and the corridor, and then the salon opens and all that. So I wanted to replicate that with these dancers that they were performing for us, just for me, to record them. And just the feeling of their clothes, because they were dressed. These dancers were actually dressed like they were, you know, they are shooting the scene. We were not only recording sound. And I had the opportunity to have that perspective of their feet, their footsteps, the shoes, the cloth, in every aspect, no, in every resonance. And you can't cheat that. Once you cut those tracks and you put it on sound, you say, that's the real thing. That's the way it sounds. Even when it, you know, it should be subtle. It should be almost unperceivable, because there is music there, obviously, and there's a lot of things. But I'm very happy that the actual place does exist, because that opens the opportunity to do all these recordings.
It definitely came through. I mean, it did truly feel like the biggest bar, the best bar to be at in that particular evening. So yeah. It was such a beautiful sequence.
And Darius Congi photography there, because it's a very complicated place.
Oh gosh, yeah, it's humongous. At least it looked humongous. I mean, it could be much.
It's really big. But you know, Darius was like running with Alejandro to where Alejandro was looking, and Daniel was following, and the crew was following. So at one point, I was there during the shooting of that scene. At one point, Alejandro wanted to have a very close source of sound for the group when they are around Silverio, around Daniel Jimenez Cacho. And we wanted to capture that closeness to them. So I brought this PA system, a speaker, and we placed the music right next to that. So in a way, even when they rehearse a lot, in a way also that Ius and Alejandro were improvising around that area, no? And the actors were as well improvising that. So yeah, it was fun. It was hectic. Crazy long days.
Oh yeah. And then I want to talk to you about the reality of sound, which you've mentioned many times before, and sort of some of the desert sequences and the sequences with sand. And how do you capture that reality of sound and bring that to such, once again, such visceral moments in this film?
Yeah. Kenya Sumoto and Nicholas Becker, they did an amazing job there. They knew this amazing Foley artist. He's from Norway. I think he's Norwegian. And his name is Heikki Kosi. Okay. And I think I met him while I was doing a workshop long time ago in Helsinki. I was doing a workshop, sound workshop in Helsinki in the university there, the Aalto College. Anyway, so I think I met Heikki Kosi while I was there. But anyways, he is one amazing Foley artist, and his footsteps are like no one else. So he recorded those sand footsteps and, you know, the ones that are actually opening the scene as the shadow runs. Mm. And that's Heikki. And the one that Silverio is walking downtown on that street that starts to evolve into a very hectic downtown Mexico place, those footsteps are also Heikki Kosi. Mm. No? So he was crucial on having that sense of reality, but not real, you know, which is a very easy thing to explain, but it's a very difficult thing to do. Mm.
That also, now I'm thinking about the scene with the pile of bodies, and yeah. I don't know, that's also just such a truly striking visual. And I'm wondering what it was like to also, sorry to go on these sort of just...
Yeah, please.
But it's stunning what you guys were able to, from a production standpoint, what you guys were able to construct. And I'm just curious, what was that soundscape like? And what was it like creating that particular moment?
Alejandro has dreamed many times about that idea of having a pile of bodies. It came many, many years ago. He mentioned to me that he wanted to do a physical piece with dancers that you, as the viewer, could go, like, let's say a theater, and you see this performance, and the performance is building and building and building a mountain of human bodies. And but I mean, that idea was on Alejandro's head long, long time ago. And then he realized that it had, you know, an impact in his memory, and it's related to that scene. And it's a very weird place. That place is where the Aztec Empire was built originally, okay? Before the Spaniards came, the pre-Hispanic history there is the hub of the Aztecs, is there, is exactly that place. Mm-hmm. The largest pyramid on this side of the world were those pyramids, even mm-hmm. bigger than Teotihuacan and all that. So imagine that place after the Spaniard the conquest and the whole mixture of two cultures. Well, that place was buried with cathedrals and a completely different religion. And that place now, which we call Zócalo, well, the Zócalo is where all the political expressions occur, no? In a very civilized way. No? Manifestations do happen there. Plantones, like we call them here. And then imagine it has a lot of energy, that area, no? It has hundreds of years of energy. And then all of a sudden you subtract all that and there is an absence of sound, mm-hmm. which is not, obviously, there's things there. Mm. That scene has these dogs, you know, surrounding Silverio as he approaches Centeotl, that breeding corn god. So all those things have been evolved in the imagination of Alejandro, and then have been evolved in the imagination of the people that has been working on creating that scene, on the photography of the scene, and then us with the sound. But again, it has been very long and very organic discovery process. We never got to one scene and say, okay, this is the way it should be. Good, bye. It never happened. It just kept growing. And someone else took it and added something, and then someone else later took it again and added something else. And Alejandro was again shifting things on the mix stage. That's another thing we should mention here, the amazing job that John Taylor, the mixer, the dialogue and music mixer, did along with Frankie Montaño, who did effects. But these guys, they did so much for the film and so much for making so much better everything we brought to the mixing board. Without John Taylor, I would be completely lost.
Mm. And I'm curious as to when you've obviously worked with Alejandro for decades at this point, many decades. And I'm wondering where the first iteration of Bardo came to you first.
I think I read a version of the script late in 2018, because I kind of wanted to do something different. But you know, after The Revenant, I think Alejandro was scratching his head saying, well, what are my options? And he had this story, very personal story, and he started developing the script with Nico Giacobone. And I read a version of it, which was longer. It had many other scenes. And then he was about to shoot in 2020, and then the pandemic came and the whole thing, you know, the rest is history. But regardless, I think, yeah, it was around late 2018 that I was reading a very brave script, no? Very, very sensitive and very personal. At the same time, is not an autobiographic thing at all, but it's very personal.
Mm. And what did you learn about yourself on this project, as well as what did you learn from about Alejandro on this project?
Yeah. Well, there's resilience in every one of us. And there is a big opportunity to understand how resilient you are and how willing to try something again and again and again and fail and then come back and do it again, you know? So Alejandro can be, in a very good way, extremely demanding, and trying to discover things is the most challenging thing, because there, you know, it's not a recipe, no? It's not a recipe of, oh, you have to do this and that and congratulations. It never happens like that. So in a way, you have to trust your gut feelings. You're blindfolded, walking on the sound of something, and you have a blank page in the computer, and you start from scratch, from ideas, from conversations with Alejandro, and the rest is uncertain. And that can be very challenging, because sometimes it's very frightening, and sometimes it's very reassuring as well. You know, even when we were mixing after, let's say, what was that? Probably after 9 months of cutting, we are in the final process of mixing. And even there, we were still changing things and discovering things on the mix stage. So as I was telling you before, the process doesn't really end.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, what is it like to let go of that? To let go of a project?
It's a blessing. Like
a blessing.
Man.
I love that.
Yeah.
And then obviously this is about to, I mean, it's in select theaters, it's done the festival circuit.
Yeah.
But it's about to hit Netflix. And I'm curious, as a viewer, as a just, what do you hope when someone clicks on Bardo? What do you hope that they take away when they finish the film?
That's really a very good question, because it's very challenging. It's in Espanol, no? It's in Spanish.
Yes.
So it's very challenging to try to catch up with the subtitle, literal interpretation of the dialogue. I strongly suggest to the non-Spanish speakers to forget about that and just go. You know, it's like music. I was born hearing music from everywhere in the world, no? And I couldn't understand a word as I was growing up. I was just hearing lovely music that I love from, let's say, the Beatles. And I can swear that I understood nothing of the lyrics. But I couldn't care less, because I get it. I knew it, no? I dig it, I loved it, and it moved me. And I made my own interpretation of the lyrics. So I think the viewer of Bardo should make his own interpretation. It's a song. So you just grab good headphones. You can hear amazing Atmos now on Netflix. And you just imagine this is a sound piece, a composition, no, a musical piece with image. Mm. Put your headphones, go with the flow. And maybe later, if you're curious, go back and check what they were talking. But it's really not that important. It's very emotional and very sound driven. And it's not important what they actually say at that point. Later, you can.
Yeah, it is. It's very visceral. It is very visceral. I agree.
Exactly visceral.
Yeah. But Martin, we're getting right at time.
Gracias.
I just want to say thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure, and I'm so glad to have been able to talk to you for.
You're very kind. Thank you.
This length of time. So I wish the best for you. I wish the best for this film, and I can't wait until it's out into the broader world.
Lovely. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time, and a very good talking, a very good conversation with you.
Thank you all for listening. This episode was edited and produced by me, Jackson Vickery. Graphics were done by Dylan Michael, and the opening and closing theme were done by Sterling Gavinsky.